One Foot in Nerd Tangent.
No game, Roundhead. Cricket.
Cricket? Nobody understands cricket. You gotta know what a crumpet is to understand cricket.
I'll teach you.
Hello and welcome to Unfunny Nerd Tangent episode 109. My name is Greg, your Captain Boomerang, today's host and ninja sensei, taking a break from mimicking my master's martial arts moves to instead appear like a shiny blue fire ghost as we take a look back at the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, a story that reminds me of something that happened years ago in Japan. And yes, I understand cricket. Joining me to discuss all things on the half shell and prove that you can't spell mutant without UNT. From Phoenix, Arizona, structurally speaking, he's wondering whether or not it's a good idea for the rest of our buddies to drop in. Engineer, mechanic, skateboarder, and all-round fan of whacking things with a stick, he's always ready for that Kodak moment. He's Bossa Nova, or is that Chevy Nova? Either way, he does dream about Harrison Ford. He's the super Jew, Jared Rabinowitz.
Son of a bitch.
Oh my God, he knows my name.
We've lost Neo already.
I fucking love this show already.
coming to us from Boise, Idaho. He used to dress up using kitchen utensils and gather wayward young men into a warehouse to tell them he's their father. But now, as our great leader, he's happy for us to just sit here on our butts. He still has that cymbal crash echoing through his ears, but he's also the only one to actually land a blow when we all team up to fight some guy on a rooftop. The founder and proprietor of the Steel Cage Podcast Network and master of the new Turbo Ginsu, he doesn't think, he knows, he's Mr. Joshua Schlag.
What are you, some kind of punker? Dude, I love all the 90s references.
Baby low life.
All right, joining Unfunny Nerd Tangent for the first time, fresh from a recent midnight session of Critters, he was once kicked out of Chief Stern's office in a new record. Not only will he rescue you from being behind on your Sony payments again, but he'll also redecorate your living room with a couple of throw pillows and a TV news reporter. Also,
what do you think?
Also, if you need to know what Russian novel incorporates over 500 characters and is set in the Napoleonic Wars, he's your man. Just don't let him sleep in your bathtub. From the Matt Mania podcast, welcome to the show, The Neo X.
Hey, man. And the answer to that trivia question is War and Peace.
Well done.
Yeah, thanks for having me along. Also with the... sorry, man. That was just hilarious. Thank you.
And last but not least, also joining us for the first time, when he was a kid, he only ever wanted to grow up to be Wayne Gretzky on steroids. A fellow chucker, he spends his time eating pork rinds, dancing to tequila, watching old episodes of Rocky and Bullwinkle, while ironically also doing impressions of that other Rocky guy. Secretly, he likes to deliver pizzas to himself at odd addresses, rub turtle wax into his sore muscles, and after 30 years, finally made them fix that spelling mistake in his name. His farmyard scenes were cut for time, but he's here today to prove he's the best Schlag and not the street rat son of Charles Pennington. He's Danny.
Hey, Greg, it's just Dan now, okay?
Okay. Perfect. All right, so we are here because the original Ninja Turtles movie is 30 years old, which probably makes you guys feel almost as geriatric as I do. Jared, in a similar fashion to when we spoke about the Tim Burton movie a while ago of 1989, you were probably a little too young to feel the full force of the turtles at their peak. So how did this movie appear on your radar?
I think you're wrong on that one, because right around this time is when I was actually really into turtles and had all the toys and stuff. I think this may actually have been the first movie I ever saw in a theater. Like, it's right around that time. Nice. I was just about to turn four when it came out. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure this was the first one. I'd have to ask my mom if that was the case. And who knows if she'd actually remember. But, yeah, so I actually remember all the turtle stuff. I, you know, watched all the cartoons. And I had the VHS of this, and I'm pretty, and if I remember right, I wore it out to the point where it wouldn't play, and then my parents had to buy a second one.
Was it green?
Yeah.
Because I remember the tape here was green, and it was like this big thing, like, ooh, green tape.
Yeah. That one, I remember, because somehow I learned very young how to operate a VCR and make sure the channel on the TV was set to 4.
Yeah. I think all the kids of the 80s sort of had that with, like,
yeah.
I remember showing my grandfather, like, no, you just do it like this. He was like,
yeah, we all showed our parents how to program the VCR to set a recording time, all that.
Pretty much, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that came a few years later, but yeah, I think I was like the younger edge of that felt the Turtles mania, but I had the bedroom sheets and the bed set and all that stuff too. So yeah,
nice. Someone was rich growing up.
No, actually, that's not the case.
So. We didn't like go into movies and stuff so much when I was a kid, at least, you know, having our parents take us to the movies, like that didn't happen too often, at least not until a little bit later. This is technically the second movie I ever saw in the theater. The first movie I ever saw in a theater was Back to the Future 2. And I never saw the first one. Like I just went, it was like some kid's birthday party. So this is the first movie I ever went to a theater. I knew what was going on. I remember my dad took me. I don't remember if you were there, Danny. I feel like you might have been, yeah, too young to go. But I remember I got my dad to take me, and it was amazing, and I loved every little bit of it.
And what about you then, Danny? When do you remember seeing it for the first time?
I remember watching it at home a lot as a kid. And so, you know, I was probably Josh and I lived in San Diego. So I was, you know, maybe only four when it came out, but I have pretty vivid memories of this movie. And oddly enough, my first memory of this movie was either asking Josh or my mom what the word damn meant. And so it was my introduction as a young child to swear words in certain ways.
Yeah, like we went to like a parochial school. So that's like a school attached to a church when we lived in San Diego. So like our teachers, like it was kind of like all like part of the church, but then also school. So I remembered like the Simpsons, and then all of a sudden this Ninja Turtles movie were being demonized because of like, yeah, Raphael said damn twice, and I think like snuck in a bitchin' at the end there. you know, so like it was like a big deal, and then like I remember teachers like saying like, you know, you shouldn't watch the Ninja Turtles, blah, and it was like that. I feel like that was the first time in my life where I was like, you know what, maybe people in positions of authority aren't exactly right, and maybe the church isn't completely right all the time.
Don't worry about the second degree murder at the end. We'll just but he said damn.
yeah. Which never clicked to me as a kid either, by the way. As an adult,
you're just like, yeah, fuck him.
Yeah.
See, this movie came, what was this, 1990? So in 86 the Transformers animated movie had already been out, and that kind of copped a lot of criticisms as well, because not only do they say damn in that movie, they also say shit, and everybody dies. So that was like a big thing. So I don't know. I'm surprised that people weren't sort of ready for that. But then, you know, I mean, we'll get into it, like the origins of this movie kind of thing a bit later, but it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you knew what they were making, you should probably have realized that.
And I feel like the same argument could be made about Batman, because it came out in 89.
Exactly.
And it was like much darker version of what Batman is supposed to be. And I thought, like, if it came on the heels of, you know, what came after, you know, essentially, you know, after the whole Batman run, I figured society in a whole could be used to it, but you're going from like this cartoon that portrays the Turtles in one way, and then this dark movie,
yeah,
you know, really portraying them another way.
I think it really opened a lot of people's eyes as well about like, oh, okay, there's another version of the Turtles. It's not just the cartoony thing. But Neo, before we move on to that, you mentioned to me when we were messaging about this show that this is your favorite movie, like of all time.
Definitely one of my, top five favorite movies of all time.
So why, what do you like so much about it? Like, in, you know, why does it hit all the spots for you?
Yeah. I think like Danny, it was one of those movies I saw as a child that I would watch and rewind, like even like Jared. And it came to the point where like I now know all the dialogue of the movie. Like I can recite the movie start to finish.
Well, let's do it right now. That'll be entertaining.
We're going to start off. Damn!
Let me clutch my pearls.
But, I mean, this movie was just it for me. And I didn't... And this movie was actually mine. Like, I don't know who gave it to me, but it was my movie. I wrote my name on it. And I would watch it daily. I even used to rewind the end credits just to hear the rap again, the T-U-R-T-L-E power rap, just because it was a banger. And this movie really resonated with me, and you watch it back now as an adult and it still holds up, you know, so much so that, you know, you start to see these different nuances and then you really figure out like, dude, this movie is like a coming of age movie where these four turtle brothers who are teenagers have to grow up and save their father from their mortal enemy. And I mean, it's a lot to really take in. I mean, and it really pulls at the heartstrings too, like the relationship between father and son. I mean, there's just so much to unpack within the movie. So therefore it's one of those movies that just tells a good story. And, you know, I feel it, even though some of the references are obviously dated, it just still holds up today, you know, in my opinion.
What was the first thing you guys can remember about the Turtles? Was it the show, like the cartoon show? Is that kind of your first like introduction to them? Was like, because I know, I mean, the show had been out a few years before they made the movie. Obviously, it's kind of what kicked off the popularity.
For me, I think it was the cartoon. I didn't realize until like I was kind of putting together some notes for this podcast, but 1990 was a huge year in particular for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, because I think Danny and I, we got into the cartoon, Saturday morning cartoons. That was the thing. I guess it's not a thing anymore. But like that was big time. But then there was the movie. And then in the same year was the Ninja Turtles 2 arcade game coming out on Nintendo, as well as the Coming Out of Their Shells tour, which is a whole other thing with Pizza Hut. Like, we could go on all sorts of other tangents, but like that's kind of like when it just really came to a point. But yeah, before that, I would say, as far as I can remember, it was really just the cartoon. And like, we just skipped past, I mean, we were too young anyways for the comics and that, all that stuff anyway.
Yeah, it's I find it's weird because you can generally tell which turtle is people's favorites or whether they like particular aspects of the stuff. Cause like the Turtles have done everything, right? They've done the grim, gritty, you know, old school, like Daredevil comic sort of thing. They've done like super weird time travel and the outer space and everything. Like it's the one thing with those characters is you could pretty much put them in any kind of setting or any kind of genre and it will work because they themselves are a mixture of everything. Being that they're sort of mutant, you know, creatures, but they're cool superhero kind of things as well. But they can be like hardcore ninjas and slice people up if you want to go that way as well. But like I remember basically seeing the cartoon after school one day and being like, "What the hell is this? Like, it's four turtles and there's like a guy with like you know, knives hanging off him and like and then there's like the guy has like his head in his guts." Like, talk, what is that? Oh, that's his brain. Okay, all right. So it was this weird kind of thing. But like, so 5 minutes into the show, I'm like confused as, because I didn't see the first few episodes. I sort of came in, I think, on like 6 or 7 or whatever. So the whole origin and all that stuff, it had already sort of gone through by the time I had seen it. So we're all talking about it at school and a friend of mine had an older brother and he's like, "Oh, that's the Ninja Turtles. Yeah, they've been around for ages." And we're like, "What? Since when?" He's like, "Yeah, they're all comics." We're like, "Oh," he goes, "Yeah, my brother's got a heap of them. I'll bring some. You can read them." I'm like, "Okay." And I'm reading through the comic and I'm like, "Oh, all right. This is
gritty.
This is not like cartoon stuff. This is like full on. Like, you know,
I have the same color bandana."
That's right. Yeah. And they're black and white and like this, they fight the Foot Clan and like they clearly kill a bunch of them because they're fighting with swords. And then like Shredder is in the first issue and they kill him. So, you know, you don't know the backstory of it when you're a kid. You just like that Eastman and Laird sort of just made the comic independently and all that kind of stuff. So they only thought there was only ever going to be one. So they just picked a bad guy and killed him. And that was the story of the Ninja Turtles. And that was that. Wow. But obviously it took off and they were like, oh, what else have we got? Oh, I kind of like Triceratons. All right, let's do that. Let's use them. And let's, you know, what if we explained where the turtles came from? And then obviously, you know, like most things in the 80s, they didn't make toys from the cartoon show. They made a cartoon show to sell the toys. So that's what we say about He-Man, Transformers, Ninja Turtles. Yeah, it's like, oh, they made a cartoon out of it. Oh, they made toys from that cartoon. No, they made a cartoon to sell the toys.
And all it takes is one episode to justify a whole other set of toys.
That's like, right.
They'll release another six toys based on one freaking episode.
Like, look, guys, yeah. We all wear trench coats now and hats. Oh, there's another four turtles you got to buy.
So brilliant.
We played sports one episode. Now we have a bunch of sports turtles.
That's right. Exactly.
You
right.
know, and I was born in 86, and I would watch this movie growing up. So I would watch this well after 1990. And for me, it was just the show. Oh, I'm sorry, just the movie. Excuse me. I had toys growing up, but they were hand-me-down toys or just used toys. But the movie was what actually gravitated me towards the series, towards the show. But when I would watch the movie and then watch, because I remember having more, I have more memory watching the movie versus the TV show.
Yeah, I'm so when I would, in that.
Yeah. So therefore, when I would watch the TV show, I kind of thought it was shit because the movie was just fucking so much better.
Yeah.
So I don't remember or recollect a lot of TV cartoon episodes, but the movie is as bright as day to me. But I remember having a lot of Turtles characters and, you know, that was my jam, just the movie. Like, the movie was it for me. I didn't really need more content just because it just didn't resonate as much as the movie did.
Yeah, like, to me, the movie, because I had quickly, like, I had seen the cartoon, obviously, like I said, and then I had read a few of the older comics from my friend's older brother who had them. Then we saw the movie. It was like, oh, they're making it like this is like, I went into the movie thinking, oh, this is going to be like the cartoon. You're going to have, you know, because you saw the trailer and they had the colored headbands and they're all like radical and all this stuff, you know, you're like, all right, pizza and all that. It's going to be live action version of the thing. Like, and in my head, I'm like, well, I hope they do it better than they did Masters of the Universe because that was a cartoon and they turned that into a movie and it was a live action thing. And it's like, all right.
Well, I felt like the second movie was probably closer to the cartoons in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, because when I saw the second movie, I'm like, this is just like, yeah, this is like for small kids.
Yeah.
You know,
obviously that's when the backlash really took hold, I guess. Yeah.
And I'm a preteen saying that because, when that movie came out, because man, like when I liked it, but there was always just something missing.
Yeah.
When you would try to compare the second movie to the first movie,
well, the stakes don't.
Preteen about the, in 93?
Huh?
You were a preteen when the second movie came out?
Well, I was born in 86.
Born in 96. The 86.
No, 86.
Yeah.
Yeah. It came out in 91. You were not a preteen. You were Part almost two? Halfway there. Yeah.
Oh,
not
well,
soon after.
And three
I felt like
93.
I watched it, but I felt like I watched it just after the fact. Like, I just feel like I remember watching it when I was in like later elementary school.
Back like in the 90s, like things didn't necessarily come out when they came out to you. They came out when they were available to you as a kid. Like, we were always,
because I had
like,
a video.
Yeah, like me and Danny, we were always like 5 years behind when it came to video games until like the late 90s. Then we finally caught up with the PlayStation. But everything else, we were always like on the previous system, catching up. So I don't know. I imagine maybe it was a little bit of that with the movies. And it was until you got a copy of that VHS, right?
Well, yeah, because I just don't ever remember it watching. I remember watching it when I was older, older, quote unquote. Like I remember watching it like maybe like in sixth grade. Seventh grade or some shit like that, you know, when I was like 12 or 13.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because like it, like we said, the cartoon was out. Well, the comics were out. The cartoon was out. Then the movie came out. And but I think most people will point to the movie as kind of being like the definitive sort of, or their personal kind of definitive version of of the Turtles, depending on their ages. Because I know there's been cartoon shows after that that have kind of done a similar thing. But I think the fact that this movie has respect for the source material is why it actually works so well, because it's in that same vein of like the Christopher Reeve Superman movie. And then on the other end of the spectrum, like today, like the MCU, for instance, where they actually embrace what is popular about the comics or the, you know, the TV show or whatever and go with it, as opposed to being like that late 90s, early 2000s sort of thing where it was like, well, you can't put the X-Men in like bright colored suits. That's just dumb. So we'll all just wear like a black leather outfit. It's all the same. It's like now, then when they put the, you better believe when they put the X-Men in the MCU in a couple of years or whenever it is, they might not be as bright and ridiculous, but it will still be, you know, like Scarlet Witch, for instance, still wears red and all that, you know, like it's, and I think this movie, because they made the movie based on the old black and white comics and not the cartoon, except for a few elements like the different colored masks and things like that, and like how April is a TV news reporter and the fact that they love pizza, all that kind of stuff, that's pretty much all lifted from the cartoon. But
yeah, but lots of hints, because even April wearing her yellow her raincoat in the beginning of the scene, like that's the only resemblance of April from the cartoon, I feel, was that was in the movie
pretty much.
And I read a great tidbit that originally they wanted her in a full yellow bodysuit like the cartoon, and the actress went, I'm not fucking doing that. Yeah. and so they settled on the raincoat.
I'm glad for that too. I think they did it well. Like it was just enough for kids when we were watching it to connect it from the cartoon to the movie for those of us who started with the cartoon. You know, there was that, there was like the essentially the VW, you know, wagon bus thing that you know, can be very reminiscent of the party wagon. Yeah. You know, like there's like a lot of little things that were very close tie-ins, but yeah, they made it. I don't know. It was cool because like I was never aware that it was comic books when I was a kid, and frankly, I probably was never aware of it being comic books until I was like in my 20s, even like going back and being like, oh yeah, there's all this old other like Ninja Turtle stuff like where it started. I'm kind of going back and realizing it's pretty cool.
Well, dude, real quick, I remember having the trench coat. Like Donatello, and when I saw the trench coat Raph, that blew my mind. I'm like, oh shit, putting them both together, you know, that was my jam. It's those subtle hints that really you know, made it go further for me as a kid.
Yeah, a lot of that kind of thing, it does, like despite the fact that it's a movie about big talking turtles, you know, that fight with swords and stuff, it does actually, because they sort of based it more on the comics, and most of the story points in this movie you can pretty much pick up from probably the first 7 or 8 to 10 issues of the comic. Like they sort of go to outer space and come back again, but the whole story, if you forget that part, the whole bit of the turtles, you know, the only difference is Splinter doesn't specifically like train the turtles as assassins to kill Shredder. Like that's kind of the gist of the first issue of the comic, is like, I've trained you all these years and here's why, you have to go kill this guy. It's like, all right. And they do, which everyone's like, well, it's a bit harsh, but then they are ninjas. And if ninjas are or were assassins, it's not, you know, like I think people were sort of thinking, you know, but they're heroes. Well, it's like, and he killed their master. Yeah, but he killed his brother, and it's sort of just like a, you know,
and his wife.
Yeah, that's right. So it does sort of like, well, you started it first. Like, who cares? It's just talking turtles. But the general storyline. So Splinter going missing. You know, Raphael being ambushed and attacked by the Foot, which is Leonardo in the comics, which is the only change they did there, and then having to recover and all that, and then the big battle in the antique shop And of course them escape, Casey Jones turning up and all, and Casey Jones and Raphael's first meeting, that is straight out of the comic. And then the whole thing where they escape to the farm and then come back and all that kind of stuff. That's pretty much in the first probably 10, 11 original comics. And it works so well because it helps, it's funny because in a weird way with a movie about talking turtles, it grounds the movie. There's no aliens, there's no magic, there's not, you know, if you can get over the fact that... Yeah, exactly. If you can get over the fact that this weird radioactive stuff just happened to create these mutants, okay. The one thing that sort of takes me out of the movie is the fact that Splinter is a normal rat and just learns ninjutsu because he's watching the guy. Like, that's...
Yeah.
And the little crappy little pup. But if to sit there and go, that doesn't make sense. Meanwhile, like, this other turtle is eating pizza and skateboarding. It's like...
The way the talking rat learned how to be a ninja is totally wrong. I don't get it. It's not believable.
Yeah, exactly.
It was... I get why they did that, too, because it's easier to explain that than, like, here's how, like, this dude turns into a rat, you know? So...
I have always personally preferred the origin where Splinter is Yoshi.
Oh, I don't disagree.
Yeah. Oh, no, but like I said, I don't have a problem with it in this movie. It's just, yeah, that's the one little part where you see the little puppet doing the little moves. But I'm like, yeah, whatever.
It's kind of goofy, but...
Just kind of like yawn or have a drink and go, oh, all right, back into the movie now. Everything's good.
Mimicking his movements from my cage and learning the secret art of ninja.
That's right.
When we were forced to come to New York.
And we're away. But I think all that stuff really helps. Basing it on the comics was a much better idea because you can easily lighten... It's easier to lighten a darker story than it is to darken something that's popcorny and for kids. Like, if you imagine those turtles from the cartoon all of a sudden being like, hell damn, what the, you know, and Shredder from the show is kind of a joke, really. Well, not at first, but quickly becomes a bit of a joke, whereas Shredder in this movie is like, holy fuck, like, he's actually threatening and intimidating and will kill you. So,
and with all the drip in the world, god damn, that suit looked hard. When I was a little kid, I was like, fuck, he's got like gauntlets and knives coming out of all of his, you know, body parts. Holy moly.
And see, they've stuck to the source material there too, because it's like everyone was expecting, oh, Shredder will have a purple suit and or gray and all, and purple cape and gray suit and all this. Like, no, he's red. But I wanted to see what you guys thought about the way they actually brought the turtles to life in the movie. Like, Danny, did you have any awareness of like the Muppet Show and Jim Henson stuff in general?
Yeah, we used to watch Fraggle Rock and Sesame Street and all that. And so I didn't realize until I was older that it was all, you know, Jim Henson doing the same stuff. But I think for us, the believability was never in doubt. Like, they just looked like legit moving talking turtles, you know, and I was pretty young at the time, but I was surprised because I watched it this morning before we started recording, and like, I feel like it lives up really good. Like, it stands up really well, the way that everything's shot, you know. I think it looks to me, it's more realistic seeing the puppets and the costumes than watching any of the newer renditions of the turtles with all the CGI and stuff. Like, these totally look more real to me than the computer animated ones that they redid.
100%.
Yeah, I feel that. Besides, if you're going to be super nitpicky, there's a couple of little like voice syncy things that you'd be like, but I mean, Jesus, if you were picking on that, that's pretty rough. Like,
if you're picking on that, the CGI is not going to make you any happier.
Well, that's right, exactly. What about you, Jared? Because I know you quite often have a better eye for like the whole uncanny valley thing. I've noticed in past shows where we're like, oh, that looks good. Like, Tarkin looks good to me in Rogue One. And you're like, it looks fake. You know, what do you think about the turtles, the suits?
You know, I think looking at them now in the 2020 lens, they're not great what we'd expect from something like that. But for the time, they were really good. And I still think they hold up. Now, I will say, I recently saw a post about one of the old suits going up for auction.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like deteriorating foam. Yep. And oh God, it was terrifying. It was basically like,
it looked creepy as fuck.
They look creepy. They look like they were decomposing, but like, It's so, the face is so, it's still.
Because they've got like, the teeth underneath.
Yeah.
I do not want to see that.
Yes, the lips are just like, ah.
Yeah. It just looks like you dug up a dead body or something from like The Walking Dead. And, but as far as watching the movie, like even, you know, when we watched it last night, it still looked fine. Like it didn't look, you know, any wackier or more out of place than you would expect from, you know, turtles that are, you know, 6 feet tall.
Yeah. I think as I was watching it, and because I hadn't watched it in years, and so it was a lot fresher to me this time around watching it as an adult. And to me, a lot of it too is how they shot everything. I think everything is real dark, which works out well, you know, it being New York and, you know, in the sewers and ninjas, but I think that helps it hold up a lot more, like that there's so many shadows and everything's shot real dark in silhouettes a lot of the times, but I think it works well kind of holding up those costumes even more too.
Yeah, the color palette that they used and the mapping and stuff for that definitely kind of hid some of the flaws. Watching it again, you know, for like you, I haven't watched it in a long time. It's definitely darker than my memory of it. You know, I think a lot, you know, while the movies are still primarily what I remember as far as content wise, I remember watching a lot of the shows. So like where it was bright colors and that comic look, this definitely had that darker thing going, and it did help to hide some of the flaws of the suits and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's one scene where, you know, Raphael is out walking around, he runs into Casey and we're getting all that thing. He goes back and Splinter's like, you know, come here. He's like, listen to me. It's like him holding a candle and you can barely see anything. I remember being at the cinema seeing that. We're like, I can't see anything. Like you could only just kind of see a little bit here and there. But then in hindsight, you're like, yeah, of course, because you don't want to see all the things. And especially with Splinter, because he's essentially a big puppet. So it's like three guys working arms and hand up his ass, all that kind of stuff. So, like,
and Splinter to me is what stands out as the thing that doesn't age the best as far as the motion there.
Yeah.
Just you can kind of tell, like, it's almost like I understand Splinter's, you know, supposed to be older, but like, it's kind of the moves of a, you know, 70-year-old man and it kind of looks ragged like that. Whereas I think in the comics was a little more spry. And smooth bit. Like it was kind of jaggy motion as to how he portrayed.
It's a bit like Yoda, like he's this old
guy,
I'm old, I can't move, and then all of a sudden he needs to, and it's like, waha, you know, like he's
to give you the other side of that coin, as you know, as someone who just watched the movie, you know, like I said, more than the actual cartoon, it made sense to me because it always felt like Splinter was the old father, so he wasn't spry. The fact that he was smaller, because that kind of made me remember, like, yeah, he's old. I like, and at the time I thought he was really old, so therefore he was really small, and the way he moved, you know, was very very creaky. But then at like, and I know we're probably jumping around, at the end when he disappears like a ninja to go meet his sons at the roof and whoops Shredder's ass, I mean, it just adds a little bit more to that. Like you can really relate to the fact that yes, he's old AF, but he can still go.
And that kind of adds to the theme of that the third act as well, where it's like, it's not just about knowing the ninja moves with your body. You have to be synced with your mind and all that kind of stuff, because he literally just does the flick with the nunchucks and, you know, but I always, as a kid, I always assumed like the turtles, for instance, are quite small, as they're like, they're not 6 foot tall and things like that, because they were turtles and turtles are little. And so Splinter is smaller again because he's a rat and rats are small. Because of the cartoon, you get people like Bebop and Rocksteady that are quite big. It's like, yeah, but a rhino is massive. So it makes sense that he's 6.5 foot tall or whatever it is, you know, things like that. So that was always my inkling. I that's the one, not the one, it's one of the things I don't like about those new movies, is that the turtles are like 1.5 foot taller than Megan Fox.
Gigantic, yeah.
Yeah, like they're like 6.5, 7 foot tall. It's like, what the fuck? Like, I think that takes away from the fact, like, the idea was, what if you had to make a parody of a ninja, what would be the animal you would do? And the joke was a turtle, because a turtle is small and slow moving and things like that. It's not this big dangerous thing. So to make them big dangerous things in those new movies, kind of, it's weird. I don't, you know, but I mean, those movies had a lot more problems than just the height of the turtles. But anyway, if we stick to the darker tone of the movie for a minute, I just wanted to see what you guys thought, because I'm not American, obviously. Strangely enough, surprise. But,
well, can I ask you a quick question about that topic?
Sure.
Growing up, did you guys have like restrictions on like ninja weapons and shit? Because I remember
nunchucks,
right?
I earned those restrictions personally.
Nunchuck. I mean, swords and stuff. Mm-hmm. Would have been illegal too here. When I was a kid, this was before the major gun restrictions that we have now. But even back in the day, like, it wasn't, it was, we, even at our peak of walk in and get a gun, it was still, you need a license, we need to know who you are, you know, that kind of thing. But back in the 80s and stuff, obviously you could get a gun a lot easier, and the types of guns and things like that. But I remember particular things being banned, and nunchucks were one of them. That was kind of the big thing. Like, he's got nunchucks, holy shit. And I think that was the problem that they were worried about here in my state, particularly because I think they thought kids were going to make nunchucks and, you know, beat up their brother with them.
And they were so easy to make.
Yeah.
Two sticks and a string.
Yeah.
You fucking,
well, this was at this will put it into perspective for you. This was at the same time that in my state, the third Nightmare on Elm Street movie was banned in my state.
Oh shit.
So, okay. And for probably until about 91, 92, I think. So that's still crazy to me that you could have had, you could have Rambo or, you know, Jason or all these other things, but like
Terminator.
Exactly, yeah.
All the guns and stuff. Yep.
That's right. Because, you can have all that, but for some reason.
And I remember reading like the Bruce Lee movies when they were barely coming out, like, you know, outside of the United States or China or whatever, a lot of places like in Europe or in Australia where nunchucks or weapons were just banned. So therefore, you know, it was just hard to come across some of that content, or it needed to be heavily edited.
Yeah. We never had the restrictions to the degree that the UK had, where they had to rename them. So they were still Ninja Turtles here. They weren't Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Hero Turtles.
And I don't think we ever had any problems as far as showing like the nunchucks on TV. Mm. Whereas I know that was part of the reason for why the fact that Michelangelo in the cartoon, after a couple of years, he loses his nunchucks and he just uses a little grappling hook thing, because they were like, we have to keep editing out the nunchucks and reanimating stuff for the English. So let's just, what if he just didn't use nunchucks anymore? Okay.
Wow.
Which sucks. Because he's so we weren't to that level, but yeah, it was still, I think the main concern from here was that, you know, kids were gonna go run around in the sewer and things like that, and like drown or you know, disappear or yeah, you know.
Do you remember how quick those fucking Foot Clan ninjas would just dive into the gutter?
Oh, man.
Yeah. I never saw a gutter. Yeah, and then they just pop back out. I've never seen a gutter large enough to fit a human body.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
But that or start bringing home pet rats.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, yeah. See, turtles were illegal to have as pets here for a long time. I think there might still be certain ones. Yeah,
there was a thing. I remember I was a little bit older. This was probably close to the mid-90s, where we were in San Francisco and we were in Chinatown, and somehow we got baby little turtles and had brought them home. And, you know, my sister and I were playing with them and stuff. And then my mom found out that, like, they carry all kinds of diseases and you're not supposed to have them. And they're just selling them in Chinatown in San Francisco for, like, illegally on the street. So, yeah. But that was part of, you know, me loving Ninja Turtles was I wanted the little turtle.
I don't care. Give me all the diseases, whatever.
Yeah.
Wabunga.
Yeah. I don't think you're allowed to sell them here unless in their baby form, especially unless you have like a specific license that most like reputable pet shops would have. To that end, of course, I ended up having a little pet turtle when I was in college. And then I got another one for my parents. And so they had a couple turtles for quite a few years until I recently linked up with somebody to send them off to like a turtle refuge, essentially.
Oh, maybe turtles. But,
yeah. But they're, so, yeah, they're named Michelangelo and Leonardo.
Nice. So basically, what I wanted to ask you guys was, New York City is obviously where the movie is set. That's where the turtles are from, in the tradition of, you know, Spider-Man and Daredevil and a lot of other, you know, classic heroes. But I thought, being that, like, as a kid, it was always just, yeah, it's New York. Okay. New York's got a lot of crime in the 80s and 90s. You know, it's got a lot of crime. It's, you know, this sort of, it's dangerous if you're in the wrong place, all that kind of stuff. And it's, and for me living in Brisbane, like New York, holy shit, it's enormous. You know, it's massive. It's, what a massive city. And it's all city. It's not like a little part and then there's a heap of suburbs, you know. So okay, when you watch the movie back and, you know, and now, it does seem that using that sort of late 80s, early 90s New York as a character in the movie itself almost does sort of help the tone, I thought, and the general, like, the general feeling of like mistrust that a lot of like the characters tend to have in anything that's like authority. Like, nobody likes the cops and they're all afraid, and so they lean towards Shredder and that kind of stuff. And of course, this is, if you look at it historically, which is probably not what a lot of people do, but when this movie came out, New York is still kind of reeling of the whole like Wall Street Black Monday thing. So what better time for like a criminal element to come in and prey on disillusioned youth, you know, and be like, join my Foot Clan. Well, this is your family, you know, all that kind of shit. So like,
and shit you not, after watching that scene of like the Foot Clan clubhouse / gym, sign me up.
Yeah.
Fucking had everything.
Regular.
Yeah.
And you know, that made me think of like some of the other 90s movies, like Camp Nowhere and Blank Check. And there was just a bunch of where all these teens just got to have these crazy hangouts and places with all kinds of video games and just doing whatever they wanted. That seemed to be like a thing in the early 90s in movies.
Yeah, I'm locked inside a Target all night with Jennifer Connelly. All right. That's all those sorts of
movies. Yeah. To your point though, Greg, like New York City, you know, for me growing up on the West Coast, and you know, I never got to go to New York until I was an adult, but like, you know, all I ever saw of it, like I knew it was from Ninja Turtles, like Batman, you know, Gotham is New York City, and you know, the various movies like that, where it just seemed like this dark place where there's like a lot of stuff going on, there's a lot of corruption. And yeah, we need these heroes. So, you know, it's whether it's Batman or Spider-Man or the Ninja Turtles, it all just kind of fits in. And then, I don't know, the Ninja Turtles timing was just right for me personally.
And see, but, like the other thing I always hear about New York is like, oh, New Yorkers have seen everything. You can't surprise a New Yorker. So
yeah,
for you guys, does that help sort of smooth over some of those more outlandish elements to the movie where it's like, it's just a big fucking turtle walking around in a trench coat. How is nobody going, what the fuck is that? You know,
yeah,
it looks like the Jolly Green Giant strolling
through. They always made jokes about it in the cartoon. And it, yeah, and for me, I feel like that was part of it, was like, I always just assumed it was kind of a joke. You know, it was like, what? I thought I just saw a turtle. Mm. No, you're crazy.
Well, that's, and that's
more thing, like a big turtle in a trench coat.
Yeah.
That's
exactly the thing. LaGuardia, right?
So that's kind of almost like, and even Casey Jones, where he's just like, what the fuck? Like, all right,
you
whatever.
A punker?
Yeah.
Punker. Yeah, punker?
Let's go with it. He's not like, ah, what the hell? You know, run away. He's just like, what
God,
the fuck?
I hate punkers.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, and then like later on when Kate
wear masks, yeah, over like, ugly so faces.
Casey's met like all the turtles, and later on he sees Splinter and they just kind of cut to him. He's just like, okay.
Splinter is the one thing that seems to freak everybody
well,
out.
Well, he had to do a double take because he just walks up. He's like, well, I've seen fucking giant turtles. This is,
yeah,
all right, let me help you out. Because he's a friend, doing, like automatically off the bat, he's a friend.
Yeah. So like I did think that like that whole scene where, you know, Raphael runs over, well, gets hit by the taxi and rolls over the
taxi.
What do you call it? A hood.
Yeah.
It's a bonnet.
The bonnet.
The bonnet. It's a bonnet. runs over the hood of the car. And he's like, yeah, it looks like a big turtle in a trench coat, which is funny because that guy that says that is the guy in the Raphael suit.
Josh Pies or something like that.
Yeah.
Josh Pies.
And does the voice too. Mm-hmm. He's the only turtle that's in the suit and does the voice. Everyone else is either one or the other.
I thought he just did the suit.
No, he's both. He's
I thought he just did the voice.
No, he's in the suit as well.
He does fucking karate and shit?
Apparently, yeah. He's the only guy that's in the suit and does the voice because they were like, they hired him to be the body, essentially, and then his voice, they were like, yeah, we got to use that. That's
His voice is iconic. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I just thought that all that stuff with New York and like the whole, it just helps smooth over a lot of stuff that a lot of people would just be like, oh, this is ridiculous. This doesn't make sense. Or like, I think this is dumb.
That's a good point. Cause even with the pizza guy, you know, he comes up to 126, what was it, 122 and an eighth?
Yep.
And he's just like, oh, okay, there's a guy living down there.
Like, and that, okay. And that guy is Michelangelo.
Yep.
Oh, shoot, man.
Yeah. Apparently, awesome. all the costumed actors had a cameo in the film somewhere as themselves.
That's awesome.
Because if you look at that guy, you know, he's like, oh, hey, this is a 10, you know, that guy. That's, if you look at him, he's real short. He's this little dude. Man. He's the guy that's in the Michelangelo suit doing all the stuff. That's why I said in the intro, Danny, you deliver pizzas to yourself.
I never knew that. Shoot.
I just remember that line, the forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
Yeah.
That was my favorite as a kid, and I just always remember that quote too.
And
now you can't avoid doing it.
Yeah.
For our family, like, we were always like anti-Domino's. I don't really know why exactly. I think my parents just didn't like it.
Because it sucks.
But well, and then on top of it too, like, you know, the Ninja Turtles movie, it kind of just reinforced it. I'm like, well, this guy's showing up with late pizza. I don't know, man.
And you get penicillin on it like after a couple of day.
Yeah.
And then inexplicably, like, all of the marketing ended up being Pizza Hut. So like Domino's is in the movie, but everything is Pizza Hut.
Wait a second. Can we point out that he takes and holds the pizza in the box vertical, slips it through the grate, and then it looks totally fine when they get it down into the sewers and open it up? That is just not possible. Well, because
it was late. It was cold pizza, so it's not going to slide. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's, I enjoyed the Whopper product placement, too, in the beginning. I
don't know Whopper and Pepsi products, too.
Yeah. You don't get that as much anymore.
No.
The cigarettes to kids, that's another one that you don't get.
Yeah, that was, oh my God. Regular
menthol. Yeah, you couldn't even joke about kids having that now.
Well, that's one kid smoking a cigar.
At the beginning,
And there's Pepsi cans and Mountain Dews everywhere. But then there's like occasional like bottles and cans. Like you can never quite make out what they are, but you're like, oh, I guess there's some beer mixed in there somewhere.
But then, oh no, he said damn. Like priorities, right. People.
That's all I ever heard of was damn.
You hear as well. That was weird for me, maybe because it's Australia and like we say a lot of other things a lot more often. But like damn, it's like no, like even as a kid, if you were like, oh damn it, no, I don't remember ever hearing anyone be pulled up and be like, oi, you know, don't curse, don't swear.
My mom growing up, I remember she used to say, nada de damn it in la casa, because she spoke nothing but Spanish. But she knew what all the curse words were. So if anyone said damn it, she'd be like, nada de damn it in mi casa. And that means no damn in my house, damn it.
It's funny because this one, I remember all the backlash because of the cuss word, but this played a pretty heavy rotation in our house for me as a kid between this Karate Kid, but then Roger Rabbit. Which that one caught no flack, which looking back on it's like, oh man, they should have been saying something about that movie.
Bunch of titties in my face.
But how do you guys feel about the origins of the turtles in this movie and the way that they're sort of portrayed? More in a sense, like you don't get all the, like if you were going in cold, you don't get the explanation until a little bit later when Splinter explains to April. And then you get a little bit more later when Splinter talks to Danny. So do you think that it helped going in? You sort of knew the idea anyway, but, you know, they didn't have to spell it out for you.
I don't think they have to spell it out right away. I think playing it out is totally fine. Cause that way, you know, through the movie, you know, if you're coming in cold, you can kind of question, well, how'd this happen? You know, and you're wondering, you don't always need answers to things like that right away. And I think the way that they did it, where you didn't have to have some sort of prologue or backstory explanation to start off and you kind of got right into it. I think that worked better than, or the way they did it worked better than doing that. That it just kind of, came out as part of the story, as being explained to somebody else who is in a, would be in a similar situation and wouldn't know when they're explained to April and to Danny. And it just kind of happens like that. So I think that worked out well. You know, I think as, you know, I don't remember, you know, as a kid, whether the way, it, you know, knowing, from the cartoons and stuff helped anything. I think it got me excited for it. I don't think you needed it right away, but because like I said, I like what they did and how it played out to somebody else who was getting the backstory and kind of taking them back kind of at the same time. So in a way, April is the audience.
That's typically how in other mediums as well. That's typically how the origin is explained. It's explained to somebody who has just sort of walked in and gone, what the fuck? Yeah. Like the original comic is probably the clunkiest because it is literally Splinter being like, okay, so now I'm going to tell you why I've trained you for all these years. And here's how we became like what we are. And it's like, oh, all right, well, it never came up in like the last however many years. Whereas, you know, you April comes in or Danny or whoever, it's like, well, all right. And then it makes sense that they would then suddenly tell the story. And the way they do it in the movie is, I thought, is really good because it sort of cuts back to flashback and it's almost a bit of pantomime with the sort of, well, everything's in shadow except for Michelangelo, you know, that was us, yeah. All that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because the rest of the turtles are then sitting there going like, yeah, we love this fucking story. Like, you know, like, and when Splinter introduces to them, they're all sort of like, like, that's me, you know? So I thought that was good. And then if you weren't up to speed already, you are probably like April going like, what the fuck? Well, why is he a rat? Why are there four turtles? All that. So
remember, she saw that rat in the parking lot. That explains him.
<That's> yeah. <right.
laughs> for me, however, you know, because the movie was all I knew for the longest time, I thought that was legit the origin story. And I remember getting a toy, I got the fuzzy fur Master Splinter in box. And you remember reading the back of the box, it would have the origin story. Master Splinter used to live in the sewer. He was an actual master, and then he got hit with the ooze, and then therefore then he transformed into a rat. That was the second version of the origin story to me.
Yeah.
And so for the longest time I thought, well, which one was accurate? You know, like the rat in the cage mimicking his master, or was it the master in the sewer who got ooze dumped on him by Shredder? You know?
See, I had seen the cartoon first. Mm-hmm. And it was Hisamato Yoshi and he got turned into a rat, you know, whereas then in the comics, it was like, oh, he's just a rat. He's like the rest of them. Like it doesn't sort of turn them into the last animal they touched and all this kind of like convoluted stuff. It's like, no, it just kind of mutates you into some sort of human thing. But then the movie, it was like, oh, okay. They're going with the comic origin and that sort of thing, which to me, again, it's different, but yeah, I think they basically changed. I mean, you could never have done the comic book Hamato Yoshi Shredder Splinter backstory in the cartoon. Yeah. In the cartoon, because it's like, oh, he killed him and his wife, and then they killed him and then he killed the other guy. And it's like, oh shit. So I think it made a lot more sense of being like, oh yeah, they were kind of just rivals and he, you know, framed him for trying to take out the sensei and he went to New York in shame, and then Shredder wasn't happy with that, so he tried to kill him with the mutagen, and it sort of backfired. So,
what traditional about ninja weapon, fucking mutagen.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. That's the one thing they never, ever, I don't remember them ever explaining in the cartoon, like how Krang and Shredder like meet, or how does that ever become a thing? The, you know, the story of it, it's like, well, Shredder is basically helping Krang to invade the Earth and all that, and that's why, and Krang is giving him the technology to sort of do so and that kind of thing, because Shredder already has kind of an army to a degree. But I don't remember there ever being like, oh, and that's the day I met Shredder, you know? Like, who, there's this guy, Krang. Well, I can help you. Let's make a deal. You know, that kind of shit. Like, it's just, yeah. So, which is odd, but that's fine. We don't need everything spelled out. Josh, how do you feel about the Turtles' origin and that whole scene with the, you know, Splinter's story? Does it work for you?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I feel the same way. I thought it was perfect. I mean, like, it's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, you know what you're expecting when you sit down to watch this movie. You know, you're like, okay, they're teenagers, they're mutants. I don't know how they're mutants, but they are. They know ninja somehow, and they're turtles. Got it. Okay, whatever. Let's just jump in. Like, if you're watching the movie and that, you know, that's a barrier to you somehow, then I think you're watching the wrong movie. But <Yeah. laughs> so, you know, the fact that it happens at the point that it does in the movie, and then the way that it's presented, I think it's pretty cool. So it worked for me for sure.
Yeah, I think the way they broke it up too, so they kind of broke it up into two parts, the origin story. And really they don't introduce the Shredder origin until pretty late in the movie. But I think that's really effective because it just helps create this mystique and aura around Shredder the whole time. You don't really know what he is or who he is or what his motives are or why he's building this army of disillusioned youth, as Greg put it. So I think that worked really well. And then with the Turtles being introduced, for me, that the origin story is some of my favorite memories from the movie as a kid. I think it's the first time, like, they start immediately introducing some characters into each of the individual turtles with the little asides, and then it, to me, it makes them immediately very endearing to the audience. And so I think it's really well done and kind of setting apart the multiple groups.
Yeah, and on the turtles themselves, like, if we look at Michelangelo, for instance, it's funny because at the time he was still Michelangelo with the A in there, but they fixed that now. someone
that's
opened
really
a book.
Funny.
Someone opened a book and went, "Hey, that's not how it's spelled." But but yeah, like he is his classic sort of lighthearted self in this movie, and I guess they did leaned more towards like he's the little brother, even though I guess they're all meant to be the same age. But like, this is the first time
And I was going to say, yeah. Speaking on that, you remember the farm scene when you can clearly see them all in the suits? You remember how the proportions are different between each turtle?
Yeah, he's
and I automatic smaller. Exactly, and that's where I always thought, yeah, Michelangelo's got to be the baby, you know, because of that.
Well, even in those figures that I have, they're all to proportion, and Michelangelo is a little bit smaller and he's a little bit rounder. Because he eats a lot more pizza, I guess. That's kind of thing. But that's the one thing with the suits I liked as well, which I forgot to mention before, how it's not four suits. It's four individual suits. Like, they look different. Like, if you saw a black and white picture, you could tell that that's Donatello and that's Michelangelo, etc. It's not, you know.
Even their faces, you can tell, seeing the face right away, which one's which, without the masks even.
That's right, yeah. It's a different shape. And the bodies are different shapes and all that kind of stuff. So I felt that was a good way of... I think if you had done the whole all four red masks, I think it could have still worked to
each
a degree.
Turtle may have lost their identity.
Yeah, considering that, like, in the comic, for instance, it's black and white, so there's no color, but they all have red masks, and sometimes you don't know who's saying what unless they're like, "Hey, Raphael, grab this." "Okay, Donatello, thanks," you know. But I think in the live action movie, even if they had all been red, because they look different and obviously they're speaking, you would hear that, and their voices are quite distinct. I think they could have got away with it, but I like the colored headbands.
Yeah, well, and especially for kids, like, all the different colors, like, it really just makes the differences pop. And then like, everybody has to like pick their favorite, you know.
Well, so, like, to that to that, I grew up with three brothers. So myself, we're a total of four.
Mm-hmm.
And so we each had our own specific turtle, you know, and, you know, exactly to that point, like, you know, we were like, personally, I was always a fan of Donatello just because that's for the longest time, that was the only Ninja Turtle that I had. And come to find out, he's the smart one of the group, you know? Yeah.
Did anyone else? So for me, I have a different favorite turtle as an adult compared to as a child. Did anyone else run into that? So as a child, I loved Leonardo, but looking back, it was solely because blue was my favorite color. So mm-hmm. that was why I liked Leonardo. But as an adult, I think really, depending on what day you ask me, I probably like a different one more. But I would pick Michelangelo the most just because of his fun, jovial nature. I love him the most. But it was funny because that was Josh's as a kid. So he was off limits. Yeah. And so I liked Leonardo. But as an adult now, I would always pick Michelangelo.
When I first started watching the cartoon, Michelangelo was my favorite. But then as I sort of got more into it, and I think the movie sealed the deal for me, I'm like, oh, Raph is where it's
at. Raph.
Yeah.
And see, I went from Raph because red was my favorite color to Michelangelo.
Well, you love the old comic. You love the old comics then, Jared. Full red. Whoa.
Yeah.
But with you,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say
I'm in the exact same position. Like I feel like somewhere in there I should probably have liked Donatello as well, just from the technology side of things. But yeah, I'm the same boat as far as like I loved Michelangelo when I was a kid, and then just growing up, like Raphael, like he's just so complex and interesting. Like yeah. I can't help but be drawn to him. So
if we stick with Mikey just for the minute. I like this movie because the cartoon turned him into that full-on surfer guy. You know, like what's it called? You know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Bill and Ted.
Everything from the late 80s, early 90s. Like this movie came out like I think the year after Bill and Ted. Like all that stuff. Like it was just very.
Yeah, you know,
that was.
But so the cartoon version of him, he's very much like a Bill and Ted Ridgemont High sort of guy, but. I liked this movie, actually. He still liked that, but they kind of toned him down a bit. And he is sort of still goofy and a prankster, and the love of pizza is like the major force in his life and this kind of stuff. But I do like the fact that he's a lot more nuanced in the movie than he is. He's not just like, whoa, dude, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You're very correct, because one thing that I noticed when I was watching the movie is like Donatello tries to get deep with him in the beginning, doesn't really get far because of of Master Splinter's speech. He's full of quips and he's smart, but then in the farm scene, like you don't really hear from him at all, but he's the one doing like the most fighting, and he's punching that punching bag, and he's, you know, doing the training against the three other turtles. So you can see different degrees of Michelangelo. But then, you know, then he rubs turtle wax on himself, right?
Well, that's the one thing that I wish they had left in the movie, because they cut his scenes. You know how it's Leonardo is doing this, and then there's Casey Jones. It's like, I know, and then there's Michelangelo. Like, what the fuck? But yeah, they just show him
out of that bag
thing. And if you look, I'm pretty sure I think it's that scene. At the end. And they say, oh, they're all working out their pain in a different way. And Raphael is on the roof. He's like, Splinter. If you look closely at that, I'm pretty sure it's Michelangelo. Like the suit. It's not.
Oh.
It's Michelangelo. And they've put Raph's voice over it doing it. Mm. And so I'm pretty sure that's the thing. Because the idea of that is, it's again from the comics, Michelangelo goes real quiet, doesn't speak to anyone. And all he does is train. And he's kind of going a bit like, not psycho, but
does a 180 from his persona.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
and he doesn't say a single word on the farmhouse except for the whole with the turtle wax thing. Like,
oh,
So one of the notes I wrote down when I was rewatching it again today was like, and like this movie, I feel like it kind of jumped from the farmhouse to that end scene, and like, or not, you know, them going to the sewer and then the end scene, but returning to New York, essentially, I felt like they were missing like a montage of some sort. And it doesn't have to be like a ridiculous Rocky IV montage, but like, you know, something going on. And like seeing Michelangelo like go to that level, that would have been cool.
Training montage was it for me, because I think when they were doing the training montage and whatnot, and then all of a sudden, I mean, and this may be diving more farther into it, but I felt like he was the only turtle that lasted the longest from an audio cue standpoint against Shredder, because he played Paper Rock Scissors against Donatello.
Yeah.
And I like, you can hear his voice fighting the Shredder.
Yeah, he's
like
more involved
of the longest of the,
he's
of
scream- the besides Raph, but Raph screams the whole movie. Yeah. Michelangelo is actually, he's like that. Like he's really going for it against Shredder because he's going psycho. So
exactly.
But
man, Leo was a disappointment going against Shredder with that dive at the beginning. I'm like,
He's the one that managed to land a hit though out of everybody, so to speak.
That is true.
Gotta give him that.
And I thought, I mean, just to finish on Michelangelo, like they do still let the charm of Mikey like shine through. Like, I mean, the back and forth with the foot soldier, like the nunchuck.
I mean, a fellow chucker,
that is just still up there for like, this is in a movie, like this is awesome. Like that would be something out of the MCU nowadays. Like you could see that happening, like, you know, or, you know, like I just thought that whole thing, and just the and the all the different, you know, oh, look how good he is, and the foot soldier being impressed is like, oh,
the foot soldier deserves some kudos on whoever that actor was, because he played that off well.
I think I was reading somewhere that foot soldier actually was one of the turtle,
like stunt guy.
Actor, stunt guys,
That could have been, because I know it did say that it was one of the the guys in the suits for the turtles was also one of the foot soldiers.
Yeah, they are all in the movie, like we said.
Yeah,
Raph is the guy in the cab. Michelangelo delivers a pizza to himself. I think it's the Donatello, I think, is the guy that in the subway station with April, you know, where she's like, oh, I'm behind on my Sony payments again, and he's like, I deliver a message, and he slaps her in the face.
That was Donatello. The guy who played Raph was a passenger in a taxi.
Yeah.
And the guy who played Leo was the gang member.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. So yeah.
Gang member.
Is he? He might be one of the guys at the start when they attack April, and then the light gets shattered, and you just hear the, you know, he might be one of those guys. Yeah.
I think so. So I'm just kind of looking at, I think I'm looking at the same list on Wikipedia. I didn't realize that Ernie Reyes Jr., he was, you know, the stunt double essentially for Donatello in this movie before showing up in the second movie as Kino.
Kino.
Yeah, Kino.
I think the actress who played April O'Neil, I forget her real name.
Judith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She did a podcast with Ernie Reyes and some other people because of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 30th anniversary.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a lot of banter back and forth how, like, you know, it was filmed in South Carolina and they were in these 80-pound rubber suits and it was, like, super hot. And Ernie Reyes loved to go to Hooters a lot. There's lots to unpack. So if you ever get a chance to try to find those shows, I think they're pretty dang good.
I like that they did all that sort of stuff where they had the guys in the suits, like, at least got to be in the movie somewhere. But yeah, like, Donatello is a weird one in this because his role is typically not a comedic one. He's usually the brains. He's the smart guy. We need you to build this. We don't know how this is going to work. Fix this. You need a MacGuffin. I'll just reroute the computer to do something it doesn't do. All right, whatever.
And he had a lot of hilarious banter between, you know, he and Michelangelo. And
And especially at the time.
With Casey.
To be like, we're going to get Corey Feldman to be the voice of one of the turtles. You would assume it would be Michelangelo. That's what I would have thought, like, for sure. But I thought, he's Donatello. It's like, all right. But it really works, because I think it gives Donatello a different character in this movie, and he is much more, again, grounded. He's not just like this super genius that can do everything.
Yeah. You know? And it goes back to that, you know, first dialogue that he and Michelangelo had when Splinter talked about one day he'll be gone, and he was asking Michelangelo about it. Mm. And you can tell Michelangelo never thought about it due to his response, ignoring it, and Donatello being, you know, very disappointed in that. But he is the one who maintains, you know, his, you know, being grounded throughout the movie, if you really think about it. You know, he was the one who adapted to the situation at the farm. He stayed busy helping with the truck. Donatello in a farm hat was really cool for me.
Yeah.
I can't believe there wasn't a farmer Donatello toy that I didn't own.
And that moment again in the antique shop apartment fight with the whole, like, structurally speaking, you know, I don't know if it's a good
such
idea.
Such a good time for your whole, to yeah, jump in.
I love that. Like, I just want that, like, on a loop. I'll just have that up now. And he's, you know.
And you know what, man? That entire, smart one,
you know,
and that entire scene is probably like my most favorite scene in the movie. Just how the back and forth between each scene. So you have Mikey playing the cymbals, and then Raphael gets hit with like the cymbal hit, you know, with two fists on his head. They go up the stairs to the antique store, and then Raphael goes down the stairs. I mean, just the choreography in the way that entire scene is shot.
It's very much great.
And then
set up, payoff.
Don't worry. He'll be back any minute now.
Yeah.
You know, oh man, that's like my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Yeah. The whole the one thing where you do see him. Well, I mean, I love that structural integrity thing, not just because it's funny, but it's because, well, of all of them, Donatello would be like, hang on a minute. There's 20 guys there. This is broken. Like, he's smart, you know, so it does actually make sense as well. But just the way he does it, I love it. And then, of course, he's fixing the truck with Casey, which is, again, straight out of one of the comics.
And the only one who could match Casey's cursing using each letter of the alphabet was that's where I got a lot of my curse words from.
I love that. What are we on? G.
All right.
G.
Here goes Gack Face.
And the Kodak moment. I mean, that's hilarious. So I always love that moment. Which
is get...
that's one of those things too where you see the photo of it now where he laughs and you can see the guy's real mouth inside Donatello's.
That scene is always scary because I watched it back yesterday, and because someone showed me that, I can never unsee it.
Yeah, it's like, oh no, there's a bunch of things, like, don't look up, like, things you weren't meant to see in the Ninja Turtles movie, mm-hmm. Neo, because there's like, oh, there's a guy under the table, there's a guy standing over there, like, yeah. He's right there, like,
yeah.
So, yeah, what about you, Jared, do you have a favorite turtle out of these guys, out of the, like?
Now I'd probably say it's Raph.
Yeah,
just because the more brooding and kind of angry, pissed off thing. I think he got a little bit more shine in this movie than the rest. Because
it's Raph's movie. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so I think that, and you know, just the being pissed. But I lost my Psi. It's like, I need it back.
It's obsessive. And then
and the banter with Casey and all that, and the waking up and going, what's a guy got to do to get some food around here?
See, and that's another thing too. A lot of people would have gone into this movie expecting him to be lighthearted, sarcastic kind of Raph from the cartoon. And then it's like, oh shit, he's essentially Wolverine. Like, that's kind of the gist of it. Like, the basis of the whole, like, comics is that they were a parody of Daredevil. And a lot of, and like Frank Miller, Ninja, Ronin stuff, and of course things like the X-Men, because that's what was popular at the time when they did the comics, mutants and ninjas. So I was like, let's put them all together. And if you look at it, like, the Raphael Leonardo dynamic is very much Wolverine Cyclops. It's just that they're fighting over Splinter instead of Jean Grey. And Raphael is very much Wolverine, and I mean, even his weapon, if you get a Psi and hold it the way that Raph holds it, you get the 3 points coming out of your fist like Wolverine. Like, that has to be intentional, surely. Like, we'll give him that weapon rather than, like, a grappling hook. But I thought, like, this movie really put Raph on the map, I think, because it's like he's the dark, brooding one, and he's pissed off and he's angry and that, as opposed to, oh, he's just another, like, he's Michelangelo light, like he is in the cartoon. So, like, I don't know. What do you think, Josh? Do you think this movie made Raph the star, or as opposed to the cartoon?
100%. Yeah. And again, like, I never really connected with Raph as a kid. I kind of felt a little bit of a draw to him, I think, because of this movie. But then, like, coming back and watching later as an adult, like, 100%. Yeah, as I think Jared said, this is Raph's movie, and it very much so is. Yeah, I mean, like, if I had to pick a favorite right now, I've got a handful of, like, old action figures, but if I was to get anything new Ninja Turtles related, it would probably be Raphael these days. That and the Psy is a pretty damn cool weapon.
Yeah.
Well, and then Raph is that complex character, and that's why the argument for Ninja Turtles becoming a coming of age movie is also there, because, you know, you get the dialogue between he and Splinter about channeling his anger, right? And you remember the father and son connection in that dialogue. And, you know, you see Raphael, you know, become touched by those words and has probably found a sense of being grounded, but that doesn't become apparent till after the farm scenes, right? So that's why that coming of age can really be said on whole different levels, where it became Leonardo becoming the more competent leader, Raphael learning to channel his anger, you know, Michelangelo, you know, becoming more of the warrior that he is supposed to be, in Donatello just being the you know, the glue. That's how I saw it, is Donatello just really just being the glue of the family, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think depending on what age you are when you see the movie is obviously going to be a huge decider in which turtle is your favorite. Because, so, like, for me, I was 11, so you're not a teenager yet, but you're getting there, so you are sort of getting more of those teenage tendencies and stuff, as far as, like, the, you know, the way you see authority and how you act, and what you're starting to watch more grown up, you know, your Die Hard and things like that. So Raph being that, like, oh, he's like the cool angry one that's like, fuck you guys, you know, whereas Mikey was sort of the kid and stuff. So it would depend on where you were. But I mean, he does. I do like the story arc for Raph as well, because, like you said, he's angry, he's pissed off, but it's not just, oh, that's just what he is. It's like,
well, like a teenager.
Yeah. But then he has that moment. And once he realizes that going off on his own doesn't get him anywhere, and he literally almost gets killed, it's like, oh, like, you know, and Leonardo does give a shit about me, and they like to have a little hug and all that. So, you know, it's like, yeah. And then afterwards, he's part of the team now. So he doesn't, like, whereas Raph in the beginning of the movie would have tried to fight Shredder on his own, you know, whereas at the end there, they sort of, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
He does even say, though, like, I got him, but it's more of a, like, is it all right? You know, it's not. So, but yeah, I do think that's the point of sort of no return for Raph is obviously when he gets the shit beaten out of him, and then he's in the coma, and then that sort of sends the movie on a whole new trajectory where they go hide out in the farmhouse. Like,
yeah,
you're welcome. And again, you're welcome, Age of Ultron.
And again, it's just family coming together, you know, growing, you know, remembering that even without their father Splinter, they're still a family, and therefore they should just continue to ground each other, you know, through the worst times, you know. And, you know, it when they did the meditation scene in the farm, I mean, you could really put the stamp on this movie that this is where family, this is where unity is, like, the shining the most right now. And that's why they were just ready to go back.
And that's where I think Leo shines in this movie as well, because he's often depicted by a lot of people as kind of like, oh, he's sort of the boring one, because he doesn't have any outlandish stuff, you know, and he's the good student and all that. But, you know, his role goes further, like you were saying, Neo, with the whole, like, the loss of Splinter and that, like, he steps up to be kind of the surrogate father to them for a little bit. And, of course, that then, you know, it brings him closer to Raph and, to Mikey and Donatello, but it divides him more with Raphael, but then they bring it full circle. And, yeah, so I think that that's, again, in the Cyclops analogy, he is very much sort of the Cyclops of the two. but yeah, I think Leo gets a bit of a bad rap. But I think, Danny, was it you saying that Leo was your favorite as a kid?
Yeah, he was my favorite as a kid. Again, I think because of Blue, but I certainly appreciate all of his different characteristics, especially in the movie. Like you said, I think this definitely of the farmhouse is his shining moment.
One other thing I thought about the characters in this movie, which does a lot right that other sort of quote-unquote franchise comic book, whatever you want to call them, movies does, is it makes me care about the human characters, because it's not like the Michael Bay, like the Transformers movies, where there's like, are there any Transformers in these movies? You know, like there's 25 different humans and some of them are, how's he going to afford college? Like, I give a shit. Where's Megatron? You know, like, what the fuck? Like, so they're actually interesting to see, like, besides Danny, no offense, Danny, but Danny Pennington is probably
such a little shit.
Yeah. He's probably the weakest link of the human characters. But in saying that though, I don't sort of think, oh fuck. Like, it's, you know,
it was also a coming of age story for Danny, but man, what a little shit.
But his character as well gives you that narrative device where you can see things through other people's eyes, which they do with April for the Turtles. But then how would you ever see scenes of Shredder and the Foot Clan in that? But it wouldn't, you know, you just
and Splinter.
And Splinter as well, exactly. So his character is that as well, which works really well. But I mean, all the stuff of like, oh, he's stealing stuff and I'm rich. The Charles is the TV news boss. And it's like, oh, I don't give a shit about that.
I make enough money for both of us and you're stealing.
Yeah, exactly.
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. You and don't know.
And he has a Sid Vicious shirt, so that's a bit strange. But anyway.
He doesn't look like the type that would listen to the Sex Pistols, excuse me.
No.
Just saying.
He just wore that to get in, like, to the warehouse. Where's the warehouse located, Nia?
It's on East Lehrman Island.
There you go. Well done, sir. But yeah, Casey Jones in this movie. I will put Casey Jones and Elias Koteas, however you say his name.
Yeah.
I would put him on my list of top 10, top 5 comic book to movie adaptations that are perfect, along with Christopher Reeve,
Sweatpants Enthusiast,
Michonne from The Walking Dead, Tony Stark, etc. Like, that's, to me, like, because, again, having seen the cartoon first, he was like this Dirty Harry caricature, you know, like he had the voice, he was like, oh, punk, you know, all that, and never took the mask off, and he was only in a couple episodes. Whereas in the comic book, he's everywhere. He's like a major guy, and he's the guy that will do, especially for the movie, because they toned it down a little bit more, but he's the guy that will do things the Turtles won't.
And that's like murder somebody with a... But like murder somebody with a trash truck.
Yeah. Exactly right. That's right.
And calling it an accident.
Whoops. Yeah.
Fuck murder.
At that point, it just becomes premeditated. If you make a sarcastic joke before you do it, it's premeditated. I'm sorry, you can't.
And I think at the time, I assumed he killed Tatsu as well with the golf club.
Like, oh yeah,
because you can't drive somebody in the face with a golf club like that and them survive, or at least with full brain function,
especially if you hit them hard enough that they flew across the room.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that there was not a caved in face there is really one of the glaring issues with this movie. It should have at least,
like, the inconsistencies of this movie there.
Yeah,
no caving in of the face.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big one that stands out. That's the most unrealistic thing. Like, no broken orbital socket, no crushed sinus cavity. Come on now.
See,
wasn't it bleeding a little?
Originally, I wonder if he was meant to be dead, because the guy that, speaking of Tatsu real quick, the kid that Tatsu beats the shit out of is supposed to die.
Oh, yeah.
He's supposed to die. And they altered that a little bit, where you have people talking in the background like, oh, he'll be okay, don't worry. You know.
That's kind of the negative, right? Like, you know, you would get sucked in with all the allure of, you know, joining the Foot Clan and their warehouse and their gym, but potentially you can get murdered by Master Tatsu.
Yeah, just because, because he didn't beat up some turtles and Shredder's pissed at him.
Shredder just looked at him, dude.
Yeah.
He just glared at him.
Yep. Through the big metal grate and everything. It's just,
through the visor.
Yep. I do love that scene, though, with Casey, where he's just, you know, he's doing the whole, like, doing the grunts. I love it. And then just,
you know, a little primatine.
Yeah.
That up right there.
And then just gets absolutely whooped because Tatsu's like a fucking weapon. He's a ninja guy.
He kicks in the balls, dude. Yeah. Like, all the time. All he does is kick in the balls, kick in the head. That's all he does.
Even then, Splinter is like, you think, well, Splinter got rid of Shredder, but like at the time, he's half dead. So he's not going to do anything. But like, yeah, just as soon as you see Casey find that golf club and start pulling it out of the bag, it's like, oh, and the look on his face, like, again, the perfect acting for the character, just that sly little smile of like, yep, like, sports equipment.
Yeah. If I can find sports equipment, you're dying.
Yeah, that's right. I also think they introduced Casey perfectly in that scene where he runs into Raphael and he's, you know, beating the shit out of the muggers, but he's going to take it too far and that kind of stuff, which is, again, out of the comic, which is actually, it's a one-shot comic. It's just called Raphael Number One. And there's no number two, there's no number three. It's just literally, that's all it is. But yeah, I don't know, like, to me, again, like, I think that has got some of the most quotable lines of the movie as well. Like, I don't know, Jared, the whole, you know, cricket thing, for instance, which I wondered how it plays with you guys, where it's just like, oh, a cricket bat. Like, do you guys even know what that is? Like,
they didn't know what it was.
But I think Raph makes a comment about that anyway, so it plays off of that really well.
Nobody understands cricket. You got to know what a crumpet is to understand cricket.
And just in that perfect voice too. Like, it's, yeah. And that's what he says. I'll teach you. And he hits him for six runs. That's right.
That's him in the garbage can.
If you hit the ball over the boundary, it's six runs. That's how cricket works. on the full, like he does. And he sends him flying through the thing. So everyone in Australia and England were just like, yeah. That's a six.
I was just like, and you know what? I was like growing up, I was like, what the hell is a crumpet? Because it didn't resonate with me.
The one thing in that scene, it took me years. I never knew what he said until I got the DVD where he says, I hate, what is it? A Jose Canseco bat.
And yeah.
I was like, what the fuck did he say? Oh, I understood the point where he's like, to tell me you didn't pay money for this. But like,
yeah.
I was aware of the name, but I just never understood that he said that. I was like, what the fuck?
See, that's what's funny, because for us, as opposed to the cricket side, that's the thing probably that is immediately recognizable to an American kid growing up. You're like, oh, Jose Canseco, like the Bash Brothers, they were huge. So,
but like, he kind of gives him shit. He's like, why would you buy this?
Yeah.
Like, is he just no
two
good?
For one.
Well, this was before he got to that point. I mean, Jose Canseco is still kind of a
tops. That's why.
Yeah.
And the other one, the other thing in that scene, I never knew what Casey said was when he says whiffer, like he swings at him and he misses.
Oh, whiffer.
The whiffer.
Oh, whiffer.
Like, what does he say? So I remember got the DVD like 15 years ago or whatever it was. I was like, what does he say? Closed captions.
Yeah.
He goes, new batter, strike one, and then swings number two, and he goes, whoa, wafer.
Mm. Yeah. So
that's
like
all the trash talk we did as kids when we'd play sandlot ball, pretty much.
Yeah. I love that scene though, because it catches you get the best of both of them there, because Casey's doing his thing and Raph's like, well, I can't go berserk on this guy because he's just a human being and, you know, I don't want to take my hat off and all that. And then, of course, once the hat's off, he's like, oh, fuck it. Like, all right, let's
go. Well, and it's like legit warrior banter. Mm. Like, Raph recognizes that he can fight, and therefore it becomes like a pissing contest or them just sizing each other up, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's where you can really, you know, appreciate the scene in itself.
And the fact that you do get that little bit of ninja out of Raph. He does the back, like the flip over, like all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, he flips over the top of him for, you know, home run, all that, you know, which is then what Casey brings out the cricket bat, which confuses Raph because he doesn't know what it is. So it's sort indeed. Of, and then he runs away and you get the, like, you know, Raph is then pissed off again because Raph obsesses over things he can't have
or yeah.
can't finish, and he can't, you know, I'm not finished with you, and he's pissed off. So,
come back here. I'm not finished with you.
Yep. And then obviously they make light of it in the movie, but it really is like moonlighting. But his will they won't they was April works well for a little bit as well, because it shows another side of his character as well. He's not just this guy who can beat up guys with a hockey stick, but he verbally spars with April a bit as well, because he's, you know, his terrible faux pas about, you know, oh, you saved yourself a round tripper or whatever it is. So
it's like typical early 90s banter that may not age very well in this day and age.
Oh, when the whole Toots princess thing, I could yeah. see.
Godzilla.
Godzilla, that's the one.
But yeah. then is that Casey being a dick on purpose as well? You know, like,
yeah. oh. Well, he's a New Yorker too. So yeah. it's kind of like, there you kind of get it, because he means well. He wants to help mm-hmm. April fix whatever she needs fixing. And out of, you know, even call it, it can even be endearing. Like, lead the way, Toots.
Mm.
And then that's when empowering April O'Neil doesn't stand for it. So therefore, you know, pretty accurate in today's climate.
Well, and up to that point as well, they had done a good job of establishing April as being that kind of independent, feisty, you know, woman. She's not going to just,
yeah.
she's fighting for her job. I'm like, I want more money and I should be, you know, the number one news anchor and all this kind of shit, because, you know.
Well, and before that, she would say, well, Charles would mention to her, like, you know, she should take it easy. And she would say, like, no, Charles, this is my story. No way. And even though Charles is kind of saying, well, look at you, you're exhausted and whatever, she doesn't fall for it. Like, she's saying, this is my story. So even though Charles tells her just to not to push any buttons, she's so, you know, driven by this story, even though, like, you know, it's reminiscent of, you know, something that happened years ago in Japan, she's very passionate about it and therefore continues to push those buttons.
Yeah. And she stands, like, up to, she's not intimidated by the Chief Stearns. Like, no. You know, it's, yeah. So I think
get out of there in 107.
Yeah. I think you get the, I think they do, obviously a cartoon's a cartoon, you're not going to have that kind of character growth and things like that, but she was still very much like April in the cartoon, where she was driven to get a story and she's feisty and she doesn't take any shit. But obviously you can do a lot more with a real movie. But yeah, this movie, I thought, yeah, Judith Hogue was pretty good as April. And it's weird to look at now, because, like, if you look it up, she was 21 when they made that movie, which really? She seems a lot wow. older than that. I would have
Are
thought.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I feel like it was that late 80s, wow. early 90s style that women had that made them look a lot older than they were.
And not even so much look older. Like, I don't think, like, oh my God, she looks so old or anything like that. But I just think she just comes across older. Like, she's, yeah. you know, she's more mature and she plays, you know, like a, like you said, she doesn't seem like now 21's like a kid. You're like, yeah, you know. Yeah. So it's, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's, it, as, We know the sequel went a different way, but I think.
Oh, and they recasted her.
They recast her, but yeah, it's a bit strange. But now she's the one, like, online with all the reunion stuff and the anniversary. She's the one kind of, you know, championing all the stuff. So, and they are making a NECA April as well. So, which would be interesting. But yeah. Splinter. Again, we sort of spoke about Splinter a bit, but he's never really much more of the typical sort of wise old sensei kind of thing, but and like we said, his movements and stuff like that, that really works to a certain degree. But of course, the whole thing with Splinter is, of course, his connection to the Shredder, which, again, much like the Casey Jones, this Shredder is exactly Shredder out of the comics, the original comics. And so, like, I think I would put him up there in my top echelon of, like, comic book villains as well, because just the way he is, he's intimidating, he's menacing, you know, he's got this, like, burgeoning criminal empire that's based on street crime, but then they're going to slowly turn him into ninjas. And it's like, so what are they going to do when he's got 1,000 ninjas instead of 1,000 kids? And yeah, I just think, like, I don't know, Danny, do you like the idea in this that Shredder is actually like a beast and a weapon? Like, he is actually a ninja master?
Yeah, I think it gives him a lot more credibility and, like, just scary. But then, kind of like what I want to say something about what you just touched on, where, you know, he's got all these kids and they're just starting off with, you know, kind of lower petty crimes. Like, to me, it adds a whole lot more, I guess, believability to the whole thing, which is kind of funny, you know, given the other circumstances of the movie. But to where there isn't just this huge, elaborate master plan that's unveiled throughout the movie, I think makes it a lot more interesting as well, and lends a bit more mystique again to Shredder's character. I think the fact that they don't just lay everything out about Shredder, you just know he's just this beast and he's got some sort of plan in the works, to me it makes it a little bit more interesting, because I feel like you don't get that as much anymore, that with movies now they'll just lay everything out for you. So I think it works really well.
Well, and to piggyback off that point, it comes to fruition when you see the actual headquarters, right? Because all that stuff that they stole is in the headquarters. And yeah, how do you entice youth to come to the headquarters with all this cool stuff? And then after that, he pitches that very provoking speech about taking these, you know, these youth who may not have a quote unquote, you know, father figure or any sense of family, and puts it on its head, and therefore makes it, you know, to where becoming in the Foot Clan, you know, makes you part of a family. As he said it before, this is your family. I am your father. And I want you all to become full members of the Foot.
Who's your daddy?
So, I mean, it makes sense. Like, arcades, you can do whatever you want, but you gotta, you know, that's how you can get into the Foot.
Yeah, and that's like a good bad guy, usually they can like justify what they're doing then, right? Or twist it to where they're the hero in it, so like he can easily manipulate the story to where he's saving all these outcasts and stuff, as he put on. So that's a pretty good point. That's cool.
Yeah, he's not trying to like take over the world or blow up New York with, you know, or it's not like a cartoony kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, he's sort of just building like an empire, but it's underground. It's, you know, it's a hidden, what do you call it? Like a, almost like a mafia kind of thing, but it's, you know, it's that.
He has a room with a bunch of television screens that he can throw daggers at.
Yep.
Whenever he wants.
It's pretty good because it doesn't even shatter the screen. It just goes straight through. Chunk.
That's some boss ass shit right there.
That's how good he is. That's right. But yeah, Shredder to me is another highlight of the movie. It is like, he's brutal. He's unforgiving. It is funny. Again, he is one guy in the suit and someone else doing the voice like the turtles, but whatever.
See, I thought they did that with Master Tatsu.
That's but the same.
I thought they did. I didn't. Because the voice,
he's dubbed over, as well. Yeah,
really? Mm. It's pretty damn accurate, because when he takes off the mask and he goes, I'll finish what I began with your ear, it looks very accurate.
They've done some good. It's like Tatsu as well. He's the actor who's Tatsu, he is speaking, but not like that. So then someone is over the top being like,
play.
Yeah, play. Yeah. Punish, you know, all that sort of shit. Yeah. Wow. So,
attack.
You know, I don't know if they'd get away with that today, but whatever. But yeah, Shredders works really well. And I think a lot of that has to do, again, with that final scene where they fight Shredder on the rooftop, because that to me is sort of almost the epitome of all the action, like, or the action scenes and the way that they're shot and stuff like that. Like, it's, yeah, it's guys in rubber suits, but they're still doing like spin kicks and flips and shit like that, which,
well, and they're fighting as a united team this time around.
Exactly.
So it really just crescendos the family dynamic, you know, in that last scene.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the rubber suits, for instance, they just allow real movement, and you can light them and shoot them like people because they're there.
Well,
so you just shoot them with, you know, a camera and get the light on them and all. You don't have to adjust, and there's no sort of, well, if he walked through the room, he'd touch that, and you'll have to change the shadows in the background and all this kind of shit. It's like, no, just film the guy, especially for fight scenes, because it's not like they're talking a lot, you know. It's and a lot of it's overdubbed anyway, because they're like, hoo, ha, ha, you know, and shit like that. So.
Well, and the fact that Donatello could ride that skateboard throughout the fight scenes and even in the beginning in that suit, that was amazing. Yeah. I think another like sweet ass move that I loved was when there was a, I don't know which turtles they are, unfortunately, but there are two turtles rolling in concession, and then one roundhouse kick kicks 3 foot it's clan soldiers.
It's Raph and Leo.
It's, you know. Okay. Yeah, man. I thought that was fucking cool. You know? I mean, there's just so much to it.
And they're using their weapons. Like, Leonardo takes the legs out of a guy at one point. Like, he just goes, whoop, 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 and just hits him in the thigh or the calf or whatever with his swords. Mm-hmm. And you're like, all right, he didn't cut his leg off, but it's not like, oh, I'm not going to hit you with my swords. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
He's not stabbing people, because that would be a bit much, but he is like, they are hitting people in that with their weapons. And like, Michelangelo's gone berserk with the nunchucks.
Yeah. And I think Raph was usually, I think he was barefisted after they got out of the lair, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he was just doing hand-to-hand stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, really, Asai, it's not a dagger. Like, you're not meant to stab people with them. They're like melee weapons. You're meant to just be grabbing swords and wrists with them. And so it's more of a like, I'll hold you here with my size and then beat the shit out of you, not stab stab. They're not like tiny little swords. Like, it's so it's, you know, that's one of the bugbears I see. It's like, that's not how they work. But that final scene with Shredder, it just, he turns up and they're like, yeah, we're beating everyone up, aren't we great? And then it's like, oh, who's this guy? Ah, it's,
and in slow-mo, let's not forget the slow-mo effect of Shredder descending and landing.
Mm-hmm.
And the ominous slow-mo capture that happens. Oof. Like, that really sets a tone. And then he has just a spiked staff as his weapon.
Yep.
And I thought, I thought Donatello, when I first saw this, I was like, oh, Donatello's going to take him. No, quite the opposite.
Yeah.
You know?
And he shows,
does not equal out staff.
And the choreography is really good for that too, because it shows how that spiked staff, he takes them all out with it in different ways. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, Michelangelo, he blocks the chain and then he flips him from underneath. Whereas, you know, Leonardo, it's more of a like, no, I'll get your swords and spin them and flip them and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And, you know, Raph just sort of goes berserk and he just flips him over from the ankle. It's like, yep, you kick at me all you like. You got 1 foot. See you later, you know? And yeah, I just love that they can't beat Shredder as well. Like, it's even when they go one-on-one at first and they do the whole, I love the rock, paper, scissors thing. That's hilarious.
Match you for it.
Yeah. And just Michelangelo's robe is like, oh, great. And the first thing he's like, wow, like he's ready. Wah! To try. Like, all right, I got to try.
And like I said, I feel like his audio dialogue is the one that lasts the longest throughout all the turtles. Yeah.
Well,
he goes to show you, man, that Mike is holding his own against Shredder. We can't see it, but we can definitely hear it.
Well, he's the one you hear when, Casey's like, oh, I think your boys need some help. You hear Mikey on the roof, and, like you said, Splinter's gone. It's like, where is he? He's a fucking ninja, that's why. But, I love that they show how much, like, how skilled Splinter, Shredder is. And even at the end, that I mean, it is still kind of one-on-one because obviously it's a movie choreographed, but like they are kind of rushing him at the end. Like they are, it is
like sequentially.
Pretty, it is pretty quick. It's like one, two, three, like, you know, and then Leo does the stupid thing at the end. That just, that's to me, even as a kid, I was like, why would you do that? Like he dives at him. It's like, you should have just stabbed him in the face. But anyway,
you know, that's one thing I, watching it now as an adult, I can really appreciate that they left that distinction of how much better Shredder is than the turtle. Like the turtles are still teenagers, you know, they're still new in their ninja training relative to someone like Shredder. And it, I feel like that's something that you don't get as much anymore in movies. And, you know, you think of like Star Wars, like Finn picks up a lightsaber and just knows what to do already with it and is fighting a, you know, a master and is his equal already. But in this one, even the turtles with all their training, they're still not on the same level as Shredder. And really there's a lot of luck involved with them overcoming, you know, like, cause if, when they throw their weapons over, if the nunchuck doesn't happen to land on the ladder, like it does, you know, Splinter may not have grabbed it the way he did. And so there's still luck involved with them kind of overcoming the obstacles here, which I think is kind of a nice little nuance to the story. We joke about the believability, you know, because it's a bunch of turtles, but I think little things like that kind of help it because, you know, they're still teenagers, you know?
Well, dude, if you really want to rip that apart, remember what Shredder says. You fight well in the old style.
That's right.
Now you face the Shredder. So that just also tells you that the Shredder has continued or even has mastered even more so than the turtles, because Splinter, you know, knows enough, but he probably didn't master everything enough.
Yeah.
But because Splinter's very wise, was able to still use the anger that Shredder was showing against him
counter. And if we're to believe that Splinter learned to be a ninja by watching Yoshi train, well,
as Shredder, a rat.
Yeah, but Shredder is the guy that killed Yoshi. So it's like, well, you know, he beat the guy that you like learned from, you know what I mean? So it's like,
sounded like that was a whole cheap shot, you know, hidden attack. That wasn't a fair fight. Let's not give him too much credit here for Shredder.
Well,
it seemed like a little bit of a shady maneuvers there.
It is also told from the perspective of a rat's memory that wasn't a mutant rat yet.
Well, remember, Orokusaki came back from his construction job. He saw his wife Shin lying on the floor, and then like you shit, my wife is dead. Boom! Comes Orokusaki, murks him. Yeah. You know, like from the shadows.
Because that's the old, that's the new way. See, I'll just sneak in and beat you up with your lunchbox.
No water.
Should have kept that hard held on. It would have been all right. So maybe that's where he got the idea. He's like, I like that. I'll get one. Made his mask out of his lunchbox.
Ooh.
To be like, yeah. Yeah, I think as well the last thing I'll bring up about that scene with Shredder is the music. Like it is fucking perfect. Like that, the song is called Shredder's Suite on the soundtrack. But really, like to me, that's kind of like that's the Turtles version of like the Rocky music or the Superman theme or whatever like that. Like you hear that and it's like, oh, it's like fighting time sort of thing. And the way it comes into the movie with the synthesized like strings and whatever it's meant to be, like it's that cross between the old epic samurai films and like a John Carpenter movie. It's that, you know, the to me that music's fantastic. So
one thing that this movie did fantastically was the sound, when it came from like audio, when it came from the ascending and descending plane sounds, they just fit perfectly where apropos. And I just feel like the music in general really tied it together. The somber notes when it came to Splinter talking to Raph, or when they meditating at the farm, the action scenes when they would fight against the foot. I feel like this, I think that was one of the things that really pulled me into was just the soundtrack in general. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's one of those things that obviously they're going to go, well, they're going to have good sound because, like you said, rubber suits, a lot of fighting, you're going to have to overdub dialogue, you know, things like that. So
that end music goes like da 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 da, like there's like so many like crescendos and like it just really made it feel like a legit like final boss fight music scene, you know.
Like the old, like the old sort of Bruce Lee movies kind of thing, but it has that 80s spin on it. Like,
so, yeah, with all the synthesizers, like you said,
Big Trouble with Little China, that kind of thing, you know, like because of John Carpenter and all that. So, yeah. But in general, as we kind of wrap up, I mean, I think it still really holds up well. I still would put it in like one of my top, if you call it superhero movie, comic book movies, I would still put it in probably my top 10 if I had to pick a top 10 of movies based on a comic. But I mean, yeah, I mean, Neo, you obviously still love it. Jared, how do you think it feels? How do you think it stacks up as far as like comic book adaptations and stuff today, considering that since 1990, we've had a whole heap of really good adaptations, but we've had a whole heap of real shitty ones too.
I think it holds up pretty well over time. I mean, it's not one of those going, oh God, we enjoyed this, you know, type things. It you know, that you still get the, you know, at least for me, the nostalgia of connecting to the childhood and stuff. You don't have the, oh, this is so cringeworthy type stuff. I think it actually holds up well. You know, like I said earlier, you know, kind of when I think about Turtles, this is what I think about more than the cartoons, even though I watched a ton of the cartoons, you know, like I said, had all the toys and stuff that were more of the cartoon based toys, you know, like the pizza shooter and the sewer system and all that. You know, having those things and still recalling this movie and then when watching it, not being disappointed, I think says it holds up well and it still kind of survives.
Yeah. And what about like Josh and Danny? We quite often have little Ninja Turtle messages sent back and forth, which whatever, with every new toy I picked up. But like, how you guys feel in the end, at the end of the day, as far as like where this movie would stand in sort of the world of comic book movies?
I think it's particularly interesting. I guess I still don't like go back and look at it as a comic book movie just because I've never read those comic books and I never knew it was that until a later age. But I kind of look at it more from the perspective of, you know, what Ninja Turtles is now, and like it's still a thing. Like they keep like recycling it for kids and changing it a little bit. And I'll admit I haven't kept up with, you know, what it necessarily is these days, but I do go over to like, you know, and see my nieces and nephews and they're, you know, there's some Ninja Turtles scooter and things. I'm like, oh, there's still Ninja Turtles things coming out. Okay, that's cool. So to that end, I like it. And like, if I was to ever sit down and like watch something Ninja Turtles related with them, I would, you know, probably wait till they're a little older, you know, at least 10 plus maybe. I don't know. Like, I feel like this movie's maybe a little harder to get into, especially for the current generation, but I kind of look at it from that perspective. And I think it totally holds up and it's really good. And, you know, once I feel like, you know, they're at a certain point where they can appreciate it, I would definitely like this movie to continue with the next generation, I guess.
Can I tell you something? All right. Yeah. I was watching this movie last night as homework, right? And Isaiah, who is now 9 or 8, something like that.
You probably should know your child's age. That shut seems like up, a okay, father Jared? Fail. No. Josh, take notes.
All fathers care for their sons.
not in this scenario, and I'll tell you why. I was laying on the couch. I was watching the movie, you know, and Isaiah stayed over because his mom and his brother went somewhere else. And I was watching the movie as homework, and he lays on my chest, and we're watching it on the television. And he says to me, "Do you have the newer Ninja Turtles movie?" And then I just go, I retch back, and I'm like, I'm sorry. Yeah, the newer one is better. I immediately threw him off my chest onto the floor.
And threw him in the garbage truck.
That poor kid got
hit with a cricket bat.
Yeah. He's getting,
poor kid's getting evicted for Christmas. Jeez.
And I was like, he's like, yeah, the newer one is better. I'm like, no, son, you don't know nothing about nothing. Okay, this one is the best one. And we had a debate, but of course, debating with some sort of 8 or 9 year old doesn't get you anywhere.
It's like, you don't even know all that.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, you don't even know the nuances. You know, you just want to see you just want to see like Michelangelo farting in a tube.
No, he wants to see Megan Fox. That's what he wants to see.
I mean, it's a whole other podcast if we want to talk about the new one, but like,
I will not be part of.
Yeah, I wouldn't completely cast it out of Ninja Turtles lore, but like that's definitely not where I would go if I wanted to introduce somebody to Ninja Turtles. Like,
as far as if anyone's curious as to what the other versions are like, I do think the 2012 CGI cartoon they did.
Yeah,
that was very good.
The TMNT CGI movie.
Oh, the movie. That was good. Too. TMNT, yeah. That movie. And then the show, like the Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
The Nickelodeon show. That was where I got back into it. And I mentioned, like started buying
really
like,
well done.
New figurines.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Like that was that's a real good mix of, we're going to take a little bit of everything and sort of like, it's a bit like the old comics. It's a bit like the old cartoon. It's the movie. It's all mashed together.
They remade that one into like some sort of weird one that's more adapted to the Michael Bay movies, where they have like bandages all over their hands. And I'm just like, no, forget it.
I'm done. that one is quite good. And in the same way that the current IDW comics are very much the same. So all sort of the characters that you know do pop up from time to time, and they get sort of like Slash turns up and, you know, Leatherhead and all these guys, but in a different way, and it does sort of all merge together.
If I could recommend, if you guys ever get a chance, read the Batman crossover with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Really freaking good. Like, really good.
That was good.
It was so good. And
is the movie version of that as good as the comic?
It's all right. The comic made more of an effort to explain that it was like a crossover. So it was the turtles from their dimension going into the DC universe or whichever it was, but vice versa. Whereas the cartoon movie they did was just kind of like, oh, they all just live in New York. It's like, what? Like, never came across each other before, or like they've never heard of Batman. And like, it's, you think Batman would have sussed out if there was 4 mutant turtles running around in New York, like he'd take a quick trip from Gotham and, you know, detect it. But it was fine. It was all right. Sure. Comic was much better though. So, so before we wrap up, we might just go around the table real quick. If you had to pick one moment from the movie to go, yes, that's my favorite part, what would you pick? Josh, do you want to, I'll put you on the spot first.
it's gotta be Raph and Casey Jones meeting up for the first time. Like that scene is just, it's amazing. I mean, it pretty much spawned Danny and I and an ex-girlfriend of mine doing Halloween together one year. and like we said before, it's very quotable. It's fantastic and amazing.
Yeah. What about you, Danny?
Dude, it's so hard to pick one moment. I really enjoy the first part of the origin story where the turtles are getting introduced. And I feel like that's where you really get a lot of the character of each turtle. And then maybe just carrying it out a little bit longer into Michelangelo's pizza scene. That's probably still one of my favorite things.
Yeah. Pizza. Now you can go back and watch it and realize that it's him as well.
Yeah. Right on.
And then that kiddie, that kiddie version of their actual music that's done in like
such a kid
format. Oh, it's adorable.
Yeah. You can buy that the canister as well, Neo, if you're looking for it. It lights up.
I want it.
It lights up. I'll send you some photos. what about you, Jared? Do you have a highlight?
I'm with Josh in that it's when Raph and Casey Jones meet and that whole scene in the references there, and just a Jose Canseco bat, that just all that stuff. And that joke actually gets better with age. The Jose Canseco really, you know, you compare 1990 Jose Canseco to how he's viewed now. Yeah. Yeah. That joke just gets better.
Who would it be? Who would it be today? If he was like a such and such bat.
Oh, is it A-Rod?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
I don't even think he's playing baseball or whatever.
I know, but it's a, you paid money for that. I'm not a big baseball guy. Yeah, but McGuire at least got a record.
A Sammy Sosa bat.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I just don't know enough about baseball to figure out who it would be.
Maybe it could be Sting.
That's good.
Sting AEW bat? Tell me you didn't pay money.
2-for-1 sale, pal.
But it was black.
Yeah. And what about you, Neo? I'll give you the final. I will also chime in with the Casey Raph scene, but I'll give the edge to that battle with Shredder on the rooftop, mostly because of the desperation that you can see from the Turtles and Shredder's just easily whooping them, and the music as well. It just builds. It's like, oh, it's awesome.
What point did we lose control here?
Yeah.
Maybe someone should tell them that we're the good guys. again, it goes back to the fight scene in the secondhand store in April's apartment, because I love the setup. You know, between, you know, Raphael fighting the foot, and then how it resonates, that give and take back and forth between, you know, the different scenes where, like, yeah, Raphael needs to cool off for a bit. He's getting his ass whooped upstairs. You know, Michelangelo, again, playing the cymbals behind of Leonardo, and then he getting a cymbals type of hit against his cranium. You know, the stairs going up and down and the dropping in at any minute, and he drops in through the ceiling. I mean, that just entire give and take, I love scenes like that. And that's why I'm a big fan of The Fifth Element, because The Fifth Element has that same kind of give and take, that same setup type of feel. So that's definitely got to be the scene for me. And plus, that fight scene also has a lot of the best banter between Donatello and Michelangelo about, you know, these guys must be on Lumberjack. And,
the trees in the forest, yeah.
The only thing safe in the forest would be the trees. The Wheel of Fortune reference, Donatello shooting water at a foot soldier's face because he was in a fish tank and they played an underwater soundtrack just for that section. I mean, like I said, the music and the audio cues in this movie is phenomenal. You know, that's definitely, like I said, that scene. And I think my second favorite scene is when they escort April O'Neil to her apartment and she says, I don't have anything to offer you except for frozen pizza. And then he goes, let's go for it.
It's out of nowhere.
You guys eat frozen pizza? Doesn't everybody? And yeah, that's probably my second favorite. And then last but not least, my third favorite is when Michelangelo just says, ninja kicked the damn rabbit during the cartoon.
Yeah.
So again, lots of Michelangelo, lots of Donatello banter that I just love in that movie. So
Yeah, again. It definitely holds up. And I think if you are a fan of the Turtles in any way, it's probably the peak of you know, fandom, I would imagine. I am very interested to see what this new show that Seth Rogen is apparently producing turns into. Yeah. Because everyone be like, oh, Seth Rogen, what the fuck? But he did have a lot of success with like Preacher and some stuff like that. So he does seem...
I mean, he even did well in Green Hornet. I'll give him that too. Like, he did pretty good with that one as well, in my opinion.
Well, he seems very much in the camp of this is what something is, so let's make that, not, oh, I'm going to change it and do all, you know, like the Michael Bay sort of approach. So hopefully it will be good.
Yeah. I didn't even know this was a thing. I'm excited now.
Yeah, I think it's for Netflix. I could be wrong, but it's, yeah.
Awesome.
Because, and Seth Rogen also has a lot to do with The Boys, which is another comic book thing. So Preacher, The Boys.
Uh-huh.
So if you do it in that style of, it doesn't have to be the old school comics where they, you know, super violent and all that, but even if it's, you know, if it's the same sort of tone as the as this movie and things like that, I think,
although it would be smart because a lot of those fans are now our age and could appreciate a little bit more,
yeah,
violence,
and the nostalgia is always going to drag people back, so
yeah,
but, you know, but we'll get to Mandalorian on our next episode.
I think I might need to come back if you have me.
Sure.
No. We'll just, you don't get to do back-to-back shows. What do you think you are?
We'll just
I'm a part of this network.
If you can't
do back-to-back Steel Cage shows.
If you can't make
Good, then you.
I was gonna say, if you can't make it, we'll bring Tim back and just like deep fake you onto Tim.
That's that. And you get to inherit all of Tim's bad takes.
Yeah.
His Bill and Ted takes were me.
Yeah, see.
Wait till he tell you about his Suicide Squad takes.
Oh Jesus!
Civil War. This is the Tim is Wrong show coming to you from.
It's like he's wrong on those snacks, apparently.
Yeah. You can't take the word of anything somebody who liked The Tick says.
Mm. Which he was meant to be on the show, and I had this awesome intro laid out where I was going to give him shit about.
Do you have his intro? Can you read his intro right now?
I chopped it up and used I scattered parts of it into everyone else's, but the one thing I left in with him was something about he'll be played by, in the sequel, he'll be played by Kevin Nash and the stepdad from The Tick, like who was in, yeah, he was the body of Shredder. So
like Tim, the Dan Pendleton, right?
Pennington, I think
it is. Pennington.
I think
of the group.
Yes. All right. Well, that's where we will leave it for this episode of Unfunny Nerd Tangent. But before we get out of here, please follow us on Twitter. Our show is at Unfunny N Tangent. I'm at Greg T13. Jared is at SuperJew75. Danny is at Danny Schlag. Neo is at the Neo X. And Josh leads us back to at the Steel Cage. Check out our site. It's unfunnynerdtangent.com. And don't forget to head over to the steelcageshop.com and buy one of our amazing Mon Milfma t-shirts. Danny, it's time to get started on that April O'Neil version.
You are correct.
That will sell.
Very soft t-shirts, by the way.
That's
as well.
Right.
Yep. Very soft.
There's no penicillin on them. Which I'm allergic to penicillin, so when they come up and be like, "There's penicillin on your pizza," I'm like, "No, not for me." But that's all we have for this episode.
Let's not go for it.
No, that's all we have for this episode of Unfunny Nerd Tangent. My name is Greg, and for Danny, Josh, Jared, and Neo, thanks so much for listening. And remember, kids, I've never even looked at another guy before.
1 one last request. Can we end on a cowabunga?
What, you do the hands?
Yeah. On three.
All right.
Cowabunga!